quorum present, I would call the meeting to order and ask those who are interested to join in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for tearing yourself away from a record-setting warm weather day. And I would like to acknowledge the return of Supervisor Sobranek, who last time was feeling a little under the weather. We're glad to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, everyone.
Are there supervisors who have conference reports or announcements? Supervisor Paff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the end of January, the Wildlife Committee met, and I was just going to give you a quick report of how we done on a deer donation. In La Crosse County here, what was processed by Craig's Beat, last year there was 88 total deer. This year there was only 63, but our poundage was up on what it turns out to go to the food pantries. This year, our deer dressed out at 58, just about virtually 55 pounds of ground venison times that number. So it was successful, but we need more of them donated. But that's just the way it is. The whole state was down on the donation part. And part of it is that the DNR is not paying enough to the processors. That's why the $20 bonus that we're giving here in La Crosse County does help, it does work, and it's good for the food pantries. So thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Paff. Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. Let's see. I attended the Wisconsin Governor's Conference on Tourism in Green Bay Sunday, March 4th, till Wednesday, March 7th. I chair the Tourism Board on IPVEC. Over 700 people attended the seminar. Discover Wisconsin was celebrating their 25-year anniversary, and they had something at the Stadium View Bar and Grill with food and drinks. We had many good speakers. There were 78 vendor booths at the marketplace in the convention center. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Benrud. Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two items. We were in Pardesheen the last couple of days reorganizing the Driftless Area, Inc. If you look on the Internet, you'll find the Driftless Area. It's made up of four states and six RC&Ds, which are going to eventually help clean up the Mississippi River. There are we have partners of about 57 agencies. But if you look it up, you can see what we're doing. I'm going to continue with that. It's not an offshoot. It's an offshoot from the RC&D, but it isn't an offshoot from the county board. I go to that on my own, and I just wanted you to know, if you want to look up conservation and river, you can look it up. Secondly, there is a conservation meeting here in La Crosse on the 27th and 28th in regards to the river and conservation and you may want to go online, and if anybody wants to sign up, now is the time to sign up. There ought to be a fair amount of people coming to it, and I just wanted you to know about it so you can look it up online if you want. I think it's at just off the interstate up here at one of the hotels. I don't want to say which one. I'm not sure at this time. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Supervisor Bina. Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I attended the Regional Economic Development meeting in Warrens, Wisconsin, and I'd mentioned that Arlene Benrud was there as well, and as was Supervisor Mettinger, and it was very informative. We learned a lot about the importance of tourism in our part of the state and what's being done to help grow that tourism business. And what I found especially interesting was the report from Dairyland Power and Brian Rood, where he talked about how much progress we've made with alternative energy Just in the last decade, we've gone from 2% to 12% of our power being provided through renewable means. So that's tremendous progress. One of the challenges that Mr. Rood mentioned is that while we're making this kind of development, we also have to have backup systems that are traditional types of systems in case the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine. And they also mentioned the importance of the CapEx 2020 power line to bring the wind energy that's being generated, I forget the name of the ridge in central Minnesota, to our part of the state. So it was sponsored by ITBEC, is what somebody tells me. So it was very informative, a great meeting, over 220 local government officials and other experts were in attendance.
Thank you, Supervisor Feehan. Supervisor Schrader.
I didn't have a report. I just wanted to ask Supervisor Bina what RC&D means.
It is a organization started by the federal government and funded by the federal government. It is resource conservation and development. It is almost along the same line as ITBEC. And if I were to suggest something, maybe ITBEC and RC&D ought to get together because we are looking for rural businesses and conservation and rural development. So it's Resource Conservation and Development Committee. Thank you.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't at any convention or anything, but I have a copy of the Harbor Commission annual report that I'll pass around. If you'd like to have a copy of it, just write it on here, and I'll make sure you get one. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other conference reports or announcements? I want to just make sure everyone knows the plan. I think we're all aware that there will be a tremendous amount of turnover within this county board following the April elections. And just a reminder to everyone that the plan is that on April 9th, which is the planning meeting for April, where we are all, the 35 of us, are still seated as supervisors, that will be the meeting at which we will recognize outgoing county board supervisors. So I encourage everyone's attendance at that meeting. So please make plans. Make sure that that's on your calendar, even those of you who think that you might be done tonight. You're really not. Supervisor Bina.
The way I would read the state statute, though, that the April election elects the new people. Even though they haven't been installed, we are done as of the time that election is held. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's not true. Until you're sworn,
right?
Until the new board is sworn in, we hold the office. The current board is seated.
Do we?
Jenny, let's let our county clerk give clarification on this, please.
You hold office till the 16th. The 17th is when the people who won the election will take over.
Okay, if you're sure about that.
It says.
I didn't plan on coming.
So make sure you have April 9th on your calendars to be here so that we can recognize all outgoing county board supervisors, please. Unless there's some other controversial thing that anybody wants to bring up. Mr. O'Malley, over to you.
And just to reiterate, that evening, the planning meeting, there are a number of interesting topics as well as the recognition of outgoing supervisors. We will be having an update and report from our health department on the obesity prevention grant, the Safe Streets program, all the things that have been going on over the last 2 years and one of the largest grants this county has ever received. So I do think you're going to learn some information as well as if new supervisors are attending before the orientation meeting. So I think it's going to be an interesting topic. We'll hear about what other businesses have been doing and learning from our process, as well as what staff support has been there. So I just wanted you to know that that's not the only item. There is interesting information, even for outgoing supervisors, of some of the things we've been accomplishing. Now, the agenda item that I have is Exit 3, and I'm going to ask Charlie if you could help Gary's going to pass out a handout. For those of you that were there last night at the public meeting, you already have one of these handouts, so I think I've got enough to go around. If those of you that already have the handout, pass it on to someone else. But just in summary, I'm assuming that some of you may have heard some of the news media coverage or the read the newspaper story, but if you have not, the handout that's going around is just to remind you that, again, La Crosse County doesn't have any decision-making on Exit 3. We participated in the funding through a resolution approved by the majority of this body, as well as the La Crosse Area Planning Committee and the City Council of La Crosse approved $49,000 total towards the study, $5,000 from La Crosse County, $10,000 from the City of La Crosse, and $34,000 from the La Crosse Area Planning Committee, which represents all the communities within the Metropolitan Planning Organization, including the City of Onalaska, even though they did not choose to directly provide funding. That did a study that I will just summarize very quickly. I don't have the PowerPoint presentation. If you're interested, you can talk to individual council members, or a number of you were there, I see. On the front of the study, the purpose of the study was to evaluate whether or not there is a potential for increased economic development along the north entrance to the City of La Crosse if we relocate and restructure where Exit 3 happens further to the east from the waterfront, because that would allow for more economic development to happen. On the front page shows that there were actually two alternatives, what's called a yellow alternative and a blue alternative, and the basic difference is it amounts to how much further east the roadway would actually run, basically behind the current Shopko Plaza and then tie back into south of George Street or Palace Street. In essence, what it identifies is that it would have a significant impact on a number of residential and business parcels that would have to be purchased through an eminent domain process, through a relocation process, so that you could actually build the road. In summary, either alternative costs about the same in additional money, but it has a different impact on the number of businesses or the number of residences. So in essence, it could end up opening for redevelopment between 52 and 61 acres for an increased infrastructure cost, mainly in acquisition of properties, of a little over $21 to $22 million, maybe as high as $25 million. Now, again, this isn't a policy discussion for La Crosse County. This is a discussion that the City Council is going to have and to make a decision. On the reverse side is actually estimating and identifying that city and county staff work together on this, that the current area of 53 acres is assessed value as about $25 million, which is lower valued than any of the property at, on I-90 at Exit 4 or Exit 5, either north or south. The per acre average, as you can see, is much higher at those other exits, and they don't have waterfront. They don't have waterfront access, which is obviously one of the things, particularly on the Mississippi, that drives up values and drives up attractiveness. So what type of redevelopment could possibly occur if this were a decision that the City Council were to proceed with? And the estimate was based on looking at what those other exits provide, as well as recognizing that another recent redevelopment is the Three Rivers Plaza here in town, Festival Foods, the condominiums, the Whiffley Project, all those that are there are valued at about $1.8 million. So city and county staff came together and said the estimate on a conservative basis is about $87 million of new development that could happen there. Could that generate enough tax increment financing if it were captured in a TIF district to actually pay for the value of relocating that road? Then they did some estimates that, based on bonding and how long it would take to develop, that the project would pay for itself in about 20 to 24 years based on these assumptions. There are also other benefits other than tax base, including a 13-acre waterfront park, enhancing the gateway, a public waterfront, neighborhood revitalization, and those types of things. Last evening, that presentation, about 45 slides, as well as presentations by the consultant that did the study, and of course, city and county staff were there available for questions. And then at the end, there was an open session for a public comment. The vast majority of the comment was not positive. There were a number of people in the neighborhood that were concerned about the area. There were comments after after the meeting by business owners and business leaders saying that they were still interested in considering the concept. But again, the public comment at that meeting was quite negative about the idea and questioned many of the results of the study. Those of you that were there could verify that as well. But I also know that there is still continued discussion that the council will have on this. I don't know how they'll end up dealing with public comments as well as perhaps discussions with the Northside Business Association because they were some of the folks that supported doing the study. I'll be working with council members as well as Arizona Associates and city and county staff to continue to facilitate the discussion. What's going to happen now is over the next 2 weeks, Arizona Associates will complete their report, which will include the public comment as well as the detailed study that was there. That will be passed on to the city council and city staff for their consideration, and I believe there will be a public discussion process through the city council evaluating what the next steps are. The decision-making points for the city of La Crosse, and really it's only the city of La Crosse, it's not the county of La Crosse, they need to make a decision of whether or not this is worth pursuing through an environmental impact statement process. The vast majority of the cost for that EIS would have to be borne by the city and would look at all of the details and all of the potential options that would happen. If at the end of that 2 years, then the results can be resolved through the EIS, that would start the next stage for actually applying to the Federal Highway Authority as well as DOT to actually pursue this and actually begin acquiring properties and those types of things. If in the next 2 months the City Council makes a decision on behalf of the community that's not an option that they want to pursue, that the restructure of the existing alignment, the improvement of the pavement there, and the entire project that's been described to you before would proceed on the existing alignment. So I've tried to abbreviate that in a short period of time because I know a number of you were there and heard the longer explanation, but I just thought because La Crosse County has facilitated this process and discussion and helped fund the study, I thought it was important that you as members, whether you are in the city of La Crosse or just in adjacent districts, that you have the information that was shared with the public last night. And as this discussion goes on, I'll bring back information to you if we have additional information. And then I'll just take a deep breath and see if council members that were there or county board members that were there felt that I didn't cover anything that should be in more detail for this body. Again, we don't have a decision-making role in the process, but we're being supportive because our city, our central city, of course, is landlocked and doesn't have a lot of areas for new tax-based growth. It's only about redevelopment. This is one example, and they've got the tough decisions to make about whether or not the community is going to pursue this. And I hope I've described it fairly for council members who also serve on our county board.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next time you talk to Ayers, or when they come to town, could they... You know, they had the handout, but for the yellow alternative, the blue alternative, they list number of homes, but they don't list addresses or names of businesses. So we should have a one sheet, one under the yellow one, you'd have all the addresses of those houses and those businesses, and under the blue one, you'd have a list of all those, because everybody looking at the maps, you know, we can't figure out which house gets displaced, and are you going to now be a half a block from the highway versus three blocks or whatever. So if we get the addresses, that's more informative.
Well, and recognize one of the reasons they didn't distribute a list of actual addresses, they do have those because it was based on real assumptions, is that in the design and the environmental impact statement, it may move one way or the other, affecting some homes and not others, and that's part of the actual final design. So really the issue is whether or not the council even believes this is a process to pursue and whether or not they want to go that further. It shouldn't be made, with no offense, on this one home included or not home or business included or not. It's whether or not the general concept is something to pursue, because the final design may change the actual impact on which of those 58 homes are impacted, or it might be 56 or it might be 59 homes. So they specifically didn't want to get into a debate about individual homes, though there were individual homeowners that were there that could ask and say, how likely is it that my house is included or not? There were individual businesses there that could get a direct answer on the likelihood of theirs being included or not, and that's actually part of the two-year EIS process. So with due respect, that's why it wasn't distributed the way you just suggested.
Okay. We paid for it. It's a public document. I hope we don't have to go to an open records request to get it. If they list 21 properties as a business, then which 21 did they pick? You could put a stipend on there. This may change one way or the other. If you picked out 82 houses, which 82 did you pick out? And I'm sure that's public record because it was paid for by a governmental body.
Of course it is. And it's
so
all
is it going to be difficult to get, or do we have to go through some process to get
us? I think the council also is going to decide how much detail they're going to look at as they make the decision on the EIS, would be my guess.
Yeah, I leave it up to the city how they want us to I'd look for
anything else
there.
For you, Supervisor Geary?
No.
Supervisor Richmond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have requested that from the Planning Department this morning. I was receiving a lot of calls, a lot of emails on these, a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, a lot of fears. And I would like copies of the mappings as well that were presented last night. No one seemed to have them at City Hall today, but they assured me they would get them for me. I have also requested the addresses. A lot of people want to have me stop and show them the maps and so on. So that information will be provided. Thank you.
And any other questions or feedback?
And just to follow up, we will direct any questions back to the city. At this point, we've done the role we can. We'll help if we can, but I don't want several different places, but I know the information's available, and Supervisor Richmond, we'll just refer back to the city. If you need our help on anything, we'll be there, but that's the best and most central focal point for this. That's good. Thank you.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. It's my understanding that they're going to be back in town again to tell us the impact on Exit 3. Is that correct?
On April 12th, there will be a separate public informational meeting. I don't have the location, and I apologize for that, but that's a good reminder. They will be talking about the impact of the entire restructuring project, independent of whether or not the issue of Exit 3 moves. Because remember, the Department of Transportation is in a process right now of proceeding with redoing the alignment and the road surface and the bridge and everything in its current and existing alignment. If within the next 2 months the City of La Crosse decides negative towards the options of moving Exit 3, they will begin designing for doing the project as it exists in its current alignment, but correcting the from a clover leaf to a diamond interchange and those kinds of issues. And that's what's on track right now, which is why the project would actually start in 2013. The building would go on, but April 12th will be a public meeting. I'll remind you of that at our next planning meeting. I'll get more information on location, but that will be a public meeting. They do not want questions about relocation of Exit 3 at that meeting, because they're assuming that that meeting is based on the existing location, the existing alignment, as if the Exit 3 is not relocated.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else on Exit 3? Thank you, Mr. O'Malley, for
that
update. Cards and correspondence are on the back bulletin board, including a notice from Wisconsin Counties Association on the spring series of regional meetings for county board supervisors. If you want to take a look at that schedule, I have not heard of any meetings during a recess that we're not planning on having. So with that, we'll move to the consent agenda. Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Sobranek. Discussion on the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. The consent agenda is approved. Supervisor Burke, if you would take the chair, please, for appointments. Thank you. I have recommendation for three appointments to the Mental Health Recovery Services Advisory Council, and I move their approval.
Chair Johnson moves to appoint Dawn Jorstad, Jean Sterling, and Paul Brown to the Mental Health Recovery Service Advisory Council for a term to expire April 16, 2015. Is there a second to the motion? Supervisor Brock Miller, is there any discussion? All those in favor of the appointment signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Abstentions? Motion is carried.
Thank you. I'll stall while you head back for item 3-7 for Executive Committee. Supervisor Burke.
Second consideration of ordinance number 103 to amend sections 1.01, parent 1, parent F, and parent 2, parent A, sections 1.02, 1.16, parent 2, parent F, and parent 3, section 1.21, parent 4, parent B, section 5, sections 1.28, 1.30, 1.31, 1.41, parent 3, 1.47, parent 1, 1.48, and to repeal sections 1.37 and 1.42, parent 2, parent H of Chapter 1, entitled General Government of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion. Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would point out that one of the changes would be that the county administrator's tenure of his contract would be go from the present, I believe it's 4 years, to indefinite. And in essence, what this does is it becomes a future potential financial liability for the county, in that if a future board would decide to hire a different administrator, because there's no natural end to his term, then we would be subject to paying the separation agreement, which involves several months' pay. And yes, yes, I've read the contract, and my understanding is if we terminate your employment previous to the end of a contract, then you're entitled to a pretty substantial severance package.
Mr. Lang, do you want to respond?
I still think it would be limited by contract, but I mean,
one way you could fix this is just to resign.
One way you could fix it is just have it be the term be term by contract, and it's whatever the contract is. So
moved.
Supervisor Feehan is proposing an amendment to change the wording in. You know, if I have any chance, have this written up? Do you?
No, I don't.
So. I don't even know the section. I apologize. Does anybody have it at the ready? Do you know what section it is, Supervisor Feehan?
I don't have it. I believe Supervisor Schrader has the copy of the previous month's. Do you have that information?
So, Supervisor Feehan is moving to amend section 3.1.02. To read under the county administrator, this is where there are three columns, just if you're looking for it in your ordinance, for county administrator, that the term under that would change the wording from indefinite to per contract. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Bina. Discussion on the amendment. Supervisor Schrader.
Oh, there it is.
Tell me then.
Per contract, so that would the contract would be read indefinite?
No, the current contract.
Mr. Lang?
Contract would be whatever the contract term is. If it was 4 years, then it's 4 years. If the contract was 2 years, it'd be 2 years. So it's whatever the contract is, Supervisor Schrader.
So what would the contract be then?
Whatever the current one is. I think the current one is 4 years.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Schrader?
I may ask another question. Go ahead.
You might want to do it now. You know how the chair is about letting people speak a second time. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if we could review why it was changed to indefinite.
It was my recommendation that as an at-will employee, any vote properly posted that my term is always indefinite. The contract may identify how I can be terminated, but that my position is always indefinite. But I have no problem with what's been proposed. I think that's fine. That's probably clear, and it works fine. But I view an at-will employment that any time that the governing body chooses to make a decision to terminate my employment can be done on any agenda. That sounds indefinite to me, but I think this motion is fine.
Other discussion on the fee and amendment for the first time before I call on Supervisor Schrader for a second time. Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not picking on Steve O'Malley, but so any time that you would leave employment, you would receive a severance package?
No.
The severance issue is a condition of the contract that is approved by the county board. And I think what Supervisor Fien is attempting to do is to clarify that the term of the county administrator is per contract.
I understand.
And so
that.
Whatever stipulations, it might be severance, there are any number of components of that contract, including severance.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Any other discussion on the what I will now refer to as the Fien Amendment? We'll be voting on the computer on all of these. So on the computer, yes, if you are in favor of amending Chapter 1 so that the term for the county administrator reads per contract rather than indefinite, that would be a yes vote. Vote no if you are opposed. We need votes from Supervisors Kyle, Benrood, and Wood, please. Perhaps a second vote from those supervisors. The clerk has reprimanded me. I shouldn't be saying that about second votes. I apologize. That amendment passes on a 27-3 vote. Other discussion on the now amended Chapter 1? If not, on the... Supervisor Schrader.
I'm sorry to ask these questions, but I wasn't here for the discussion on this, but why were definite periods of time changed to indefinite on a lot of these?
I don't think they were. Were they?
Well, Corporation Counsel is pulling it out. These were housekeeping measures, but let me just refer to the ones that I recommended that we change, not including the one you just amended. The printing department director no longer exists as a separate department head, so that was just entirely eliminated. The other one that changed, family court commissioner, was changed to indefinite because it has not served as a one-year appointment. It's an appointment by the judges that the county board has no authority over. So indefinite is really accurate. The position serves at the will of the judges. The medical examiner does not serve a two-year term. It's an indefinite appointment, just like all other department heads. Same thing with the University Extension Office department head. That is not a one-year term that's revisited and reappointed every year. So all other department heads, other than those I just mentioned, were already indefinite, and so I just thought we should make it consistent with all department heads based on what their term of appointment is.
Is that by statute? Is that why?
I can go item by item. Family court commissioner is by statute. Medical examiner is an appointment by the administrator confirmed by the county board, just like your other department heads. Printing department director does not exist anymore as department head. University Extension Office department head is a joint appointment, as it states, of the administrator and the University Extension. So this is all consistent with the with statute.
So it's a state statute that they would have indefinite time limits? No.
I think the state statute, Supervisor, is just that there is no definite term.
Okay, and that
up to the county board administrator then. Thank you.
On the computer, on the amended Chapter 1. If you're in favor, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no.
Leon broke his computer. We have a bad thing.
Get off the internet, Leon.
Stop playing hard. Well, I haven't had the time to be interested in it. I watch college basketball.
I'm glad I'm not going to be around.
On a vote of 29-1, Chapter 1 is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 3-8. First consideration of ordinance number 104 to amend sections 3.07, parent 1 and parent 2 of chapter 3 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding work hours.
Supervisor Burke moves that this is the first reading. We'll take that up again at our April meeting for its second consideration and vote. Any discussion on this one? Supervisor Geary.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. If I bring a resolution to go 8:30 to 5, would that be a significant one next month, or would that just be second reading?
You need to keep it at current. Is that what your intent is?
Well, this is 8 to 4:30, right?
Right. Our current hours are 8:30 to 5. This is proposing that they move from 8 to 4:30. And you're asking if you bring in an amendment next month,
or would we just try to vote it down?
I think just vote it down would be the easiest thing.
Okay, to vote it down. We can discuss it next month, I guess.
Okay. Any other discussion on this one, Supervisor Schrader? We missed you while you were in Florida.
Thank you.
Hey, I missed your vote.
I thought we were going to
Supervisor
nice.
Schrader.
I thought we were going to be nice to each other.
That was Bina, not me.
When you decided this, was there any discussion on the impact of traffic at different times here? I know there's a little...
Supervisor Burke, do you want to respond to that? No?
I think he's talking about traffic on the streets. I didn't have any objection. My objection was about people's being able
right,
to...
Right, but I was asking that you would reflect the discussion at executive committee.
Oh, okay.
The discussion.
There was no discussion about the impact on traffic that I remember.
Because it's at different times out there, it can be pretty loaded up. Thank you.
Any other discussion for the first reading? If not, back to you again, Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 3-9, the first consideration of ordinance number 98 to amend section 3.09 of chapter 3 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding grievance procedures. I move its first reading.
Supervisor Burke moves that this be considered its first reading for ordinance number 98 and that we hold it over to next month for its second reading and a vote, and I would call on Mr. Lang to give an update on an item that's sitting on everybody's desk, I hope.
Sure. I just had a one-page memo because I just wanted to give you some basic information about the grievance ordinance and the policy that you have before you. But just to make sure you know why we're doing this, because of the recent budget repair bill, and I'm not going to just read the memo, but because of that, and because of the loss of grievance rights and collective bargaining agreements, there was a change in the statute to require local governments to establish either a civil service system or a grievance procedure. This particular ordinance and the policy is that grievance procedure. And really, the bare bones of what we have to do is we have to address workplace safety, terminations, and discipline. And the only items that the statute requires is that there be a written document specifying the process. You have to have a hearing before an impartial hearing officer. And you have to have an appeal process where the highest level of appeal is the governing body of the governmental unit, which is the county board. That's it. And within that framework, you develop a grievance procedure. And so this is one, and so the one before you has the different steps. The policy is in a little bit more detail. The ordinance is more of a general document. Our office worked with personnel office and I think tried to make this more of a document that would be easy for employees to follow. I've looked at some around the state, and some are very detailed. This one isn't quite as detailed, but I think it's easy for a person to follow. It provides for the steps, and I guess you'll have more time to review it before the second reading. But what I put in the memo is just a broad outline of the basic parts of that policy and procedure.
Questions of Mr. Lang or discussion? Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, if this is the first reading, the second reading will be the first meeting of the newly elected county board. And my concern is that I'm not sure that it's appropriate for us to be moving this ahead and asking them to vote on that. There could be a substantial number of new supervisors here. And if there's, it doesn't seem like this is a terribly urgent matter. I'm just not sure that it's appropriate for us to be moving this forward when we won't be here to vote on it a second time, many of us.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was thinking along the same lines. I am not going to be here next month when you voted in or out or amend or anything. So, therefore, we are caught in the middle of this thing with brand new supervisors coming in that don't know anything about it. But I do have a question for Mr. Lang, if I
sure
could. I guess I sat on the negotiating team here at the county and other places for about 14 years. How are you going to negotiate a contract with no benefits or anything thrown into this package? It's either salary or nothing. What I'm concerned about is the fact that you or someone can make a decision on what the pay for next year is going to be, and it may not be an increase. It may be a decrease. And there better be a grievance procedure there for the workers of the county or any business for all of that can question what management does from now on. And I would hope that you put a good grievance procedure together, because as I look at this, and it's only my opinion, and sorry for the conservatives here, but I can foresee that within the next 10 years, salaries will decrease on a year-to-year basis. And I can talk freely because I'm not going to be here anymore, and I'm not going to negotiate salaries. But I can foresee salaries coming down quickly to some level. And
Supervisor Bina, can I just – your question was
– what – how?
Supervisor Sobranek is raising a point of order.
I thought we were talking about grievances and not salary.
I think Supervisor Bean is asking about grievance in the context of compensation in general, and that's fine. Can we get to the question, though? Your question to Mr. Lang
is... How is the county going to negotiate on a limited basis in the years to come, and I would like to see the grievance procedure when you get it finalized, too.
Supervisor Bean, because of the changes in the budget repair bill, once the collective bargaining agreements expire, there is no negotiation regarding the wages. It's only to a very limited extent that there's any, you know, it's only within that range that's allowed by the new statute. And the only things that the grievance policy addresses is discipline, termination, and workplace safety. Yeah.
The additional comment is, this is not up to management, it's always up to the authority of the county board. So when the union contracts expire, it will be up to you as a body to set other policies if that is the transition at that time. The minimum that we have to do that personnel, admin, and corp counsel worked on is the grievance procedure. Until then, the union contracts go through the end of 2013. We'll deal with this issue when it comes to that, but compensation policy is not unilaterally up to management. It's up to the policies of this county board. So that all of that will come back to any change, but until that point, we still have union contracts, we still have the pay ranges we have, and nothing will arbitrarily change independent of specific decisions by the policy making of this body, period.
Supervisor Beeney, you still have the floor.
Okay. But the way we have it set up now, you are the administrator, you hire, you fire. You and corporate counsel will do the negotiating. And I don't know if you came to the board to ask us, okay, we did set a range for you in the past. I'm not sure what's going to happen now because we don't have benefits to negotiate.
That's exactly what needs to be mapped out.
That management and yourself are going to make a decision, and then we will at some point get involved and have to approve or disapprove what you did.
Always subject to the policy making of the county board.
I agree.
As directed by, in this case, the executive committee gives the oversight on our negotiation posture, decisions.
The exec comes in there.
Always comes in under the full authority and policy of the ordinance and resolutions of the entire county board. The executive committee is the former personnel committee in that regard. We get direction, Mr. Taunton, myself, and corporation counsel from the executive committee. We bring that information back. I believe the same format, whether there's a union contract or ordinances, will always come back through the policymaking body, the executive committee, and ultimately the county board.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, in as much as I'm not going to be here next month either to comment on this grievance procedure, it seems to me that you're doing a good job. You're trying to strike the right balance. And I just want to say that I have appreciated the fact that La Crosse County treats its public employees with respect and dignity. And I hope that we'll continue to do that. As I move around western Wisconsin in my job with the senator, there's an awful lot of municipalities, local units of governments, are treating their public employees like dog food as a result of Act 10. And I hope we continue to treat our public employees well. I know you will.
Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. Supervisor Fian brought up a point that was actually brought up in executive about the timing of this and whether we should maybe suspend the rules and pass it with this current body. We had a very good discussion, I think, a lengthy discussion about the pros and cons of that. And I think, if I could speak for the executive committee, it was the consensus that this would be a good teaching moment for the new board coming on, for the new people coming on. The second reading will allow them to understand what this grievance procedure is about before they can, you know, really understand it. They're going to have to kind of feel their way in. But we think being a good teaching moment for some of the new members. Gives them a chance to come in and understand what this is about. And there is no hurry, per se. We have till November. Am I correct?
I don't know if there's a time frame. I'm sorry if I can answer. But actually, it was due last October, but because we have collective bargaining agreements in place.
Because the agreements are in place.
That's why
you.
We haven't rushed it through.
Okay. So just to, kind of follow up with Supervisor Fian's suggestion, I think it's going to be a teaching moment. I keep saying that for the new supervisors. Thank you.
Supervisor Geary.
Madam Chair,
Bill, on regards to this impartial hearing
officer. I'm Dave now.
Oh, okay. Do we got a new guy now? In the last paragraph, it says there would only be a limited basis for overturning the decision of the impartial hearing officer. If somebody files a grievance, how would we overturn that from the... How would that get overturned, or what is the criteria or whatever?
It would be a limited basis because it's just based on the record. You wouldn't be having another hearing here, or the executive committee is not going to be having a whole other hearing. They're just going to review the record. So it would have to be something very limited, like, you know, this they didn't keep according to what's required by law, was totally arbitrary and capricious. So it would be a very limited standard. You wouldn't be basically substituting your judgment. You would be a limited basis for you to do that.
You would review the facts that were already on record and determine that the officer made a mistake. If you overturned it, that's what you'd be doing, wouldn't you?
Right, but what we're saying is you're only reviewing the record, and what we're saying is it would have to be something limited, such as it would have to be like, you know, didn't keep within his jurisdiction, didn't apply the right law, something very limited like that. Not a basis of saying I would have came to a different conclusion, that kind of thing. Right, but it's a limited basis, right?
Is that it, Supervisor Sobranek?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor mentioned that the administrator can hire and fire. Just as a point of clarification, as I understand the scope of the administrator's authority, he can only fire people that he hires. Is that correct?
We have a just cause standard, and we follow due process in any kind of termination. We do not arbitrarily terminate people's employees. We have to have cause. Whether that be a department head terminating an employee or myself, I'm involved in any kind of terminations. The only determinations that I would specifically make decisions on are department heads, but again, it would always be with a cause standard. It would not be an arbitrary standard.
Again, as in, let's take department heads then. I don't believe you can fire a department head that wasn't hired by you.
Yes, I can make a decision to terminate a department head or ask for their resignation. I always need to come back to the county board, but that's not a decision of the county board. The county board decision is to act on my appointments, and you have to concur with that, but a termination by a county administrator under law is my determination. But again, we've agreed in our ordinance that must be for cause. I think that's an appropriate and fair process, and I believe in the 9 years, 8.5 years, you've seen how I've administered that standard.
Well, I thank you for that, but I would like to see that in writing, just for my own clarification. Thank you.
It's in our ordinance, in our current ordinance.
Supervisor Brockmiller. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think Mr. O'Malley might have just answered my question, but I asked Mr. Rang too. In the memorandum here, you have in discipline or termination cases, the standard for a decision is whether there is reasonable cause. Are we saying just cause then? But
it's similar.
It's not the same?
It does say reasonable, which is a rational basis for the decision. So that, you know, it's very similar to just cause. It's higher standard than arbitrary and capricious. But it may be somewhat of a lesser standard than just cause.
Is there a reason why it's not just cause?
Well, I think basically it allows for basically a rational basis for the decision.
Just cause isn't rational?
No, but it's very similar. I don't know if there's really a big distinction between it.
There's generally 7 tests of just cause. They're pretty well defined. And when the state of Wisconsin went away from the contractual grievance procedure, the state of Wisconsin and its agencies adopted just cause for the standard, including, you know, just cause including things like if employee X does act A and employee Y does act A and you terminate employee X, but you only give employee Y a one-day suspension, that's not just cause. Discipline has to be applied equally to all people who do a similar offense, those kind of items. It's just cause is much closer, as you know, to what a criminal rights or a accused potential criminal enjoys in court.
So I would say this, Supervisor Brockler, that if that's a change that you wish to see clarified and make it clear that it's just cause, not just reasonable basis, then that's something that should be debated, or a motion that should be made to change that. Because
okay.
I think that is a little bit different.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion on this first reading? Supervisor Hampson.
I know there's nothing we can do about it, but it seems to me this undermines our whole effort that the board stick to policy issues and the administration stick to administration and management issues. And I think it's a terrible thing. I don't want to sit here and pass judgment on our employees. I don't think that's our job at all. And I know we don't have any choice, but I just think it stinks.
Any other discussion on this first reading of the grievance procedure ordinance? If not, back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Item number 3-10 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, acknowledging the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County: Ruth M. Hefner, County Aging Department, 37 plus years. Barbara J. Johnson, Information Technology Department, 32 plus years. Sandra K. Schmidt, Lakeview Health Center, 26 plus years. Bessie E. Richardson, Juvenile Detention Facility of Human Services, 22 plus years. Roxanne L. Feldy, Sheriff's Department, 11 plus years. Whereas it is the wish of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings, and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude, dated this 15th day of March 2012. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Cotter. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Resolution 3-11 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding elected official salaries for next term. Whereas the County Board has reviewed and considered modifications of the salary for elected officials pursuant to Wisconsin State Statutes 59.22, parent 1, parent A, thereof. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the following elected officials shall be paid at the annual rate set forth in the following schedule for the 2013-2016 term commencing January 8, 2013, and for the subsequent years of the term shall be effective January 1st for 2014, 2015, and 2016. Be it further resolved that in addition to the above compensation, the elected officials shall also pay, as required by state law, 50% of the elected officials' Wisconsin Retirement System contribution starting in 2013, and such changes from year to year as set by the state and WRS. And be it further resolved that the elected officials shall be eligible for voluntary health, dental, and life insurance, subject to the same terms and conditions as full-time non-represented La Crosse County employees. Fiscal note, the estimated cost of salary, $205,443, and elected official roll-ups, $32,460. Social Security, WRS at 7.05%, and prior service will be approximately $237,903 for 2013. All elected officials are voluntarily contributing 5.9% to the WRS for 2012. Comparable counties used are Dodge, Eau Claire, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, Marathon, Sheboygan, Walworth, Washington, and Wood. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Discussion. Supervisor Geary.
Well, I know it's difficult to project salaries 4 years out into the future, and I'm sure the raises we set for elected officials, which would be different than other department heads or whatever, shouldn't be reflective of what we may do for other people in those future years. depending on the economy, they might not get as good a raise, or they might get a better raise, or they might get this, or they might get that. So I don't have any problem with these three people, but I would have a problem if we're going to use this as a index for things that are going to happen 3 years down the line when we don't know what's going to happen 3 years down the line. And my other point is I want Mr. Brockmiller to do a little work, and the comparable counties, Dodge, Eau Claire, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, whatever. Maybe at some point he could get us a comparison of what wages are in La Crosse County compared to those counties to see if we're high compared to those counties. We're low or in the middle. I don't know where we are. So that's just information I'd like for some time in the future. No rush on that, Bill.
Let's give that assignment to staff, and then they can call upon the – they can use local experts as they see necessary to bring it back to the county board. Other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Feehan. That is approved. Supervisor Burke.
Item number 3-12 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the opposition to the closure of the United States Post Service Processing Center in La Crosse. Whereas the U.S. Postal Service has recently announced its decision to close the La Crosse Mail Processing Center in an effort to consolidate services, and whereas closure of this facility could result in the loss of 27 local jobs and transfer another 19 local positions to the Twin Cities, and whereas closure of this facility would also eliminate next-day mail service, resulting in 2 to 3 day delivery of local mail within the city of La Crosse and surrounding area. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby expresses its opposition to the USPS decision to close the mail processing center at La Crosse, Wisconsin. Be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be mailed to Postmaster General Patrick Donahue, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator Herb Cole, and Representative Ron Kind, requesting that they be encouraged to do whatever is possible to keep this processing center open. Fiscal note, no financial impact to the La Crosse County budget. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Cruz. Discussion. Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, I want to abstain on this one, since it's an issue that, to my job, I'm actively involved in with Senator Cole, and so I'd just soon abstain.
For the record, Supervisor Mettinger's vote will be an abstention. Other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Two abstentions noted for the record, Supervisors Mettinger and Feehan. That is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Item number 3-13 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the support the reopening of the Bangor, Wisconsin Post Office, whereas the post offices in small rural communities serve as important and sometimes exclusive points in those communities, and whereas on January 11th, 2012, the U.S. Postal Service closed the Bangor, Wisconsin Post Office due to building safety and health concerns, whereas closure of this facility has negatively impacted the community of Bangor, and a petition is being circulated in an effort to have the post office reopened, and whereas community members have requested our support in this effort, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors respectfully requests the U.S. Postal Service to reopen the Bangor Post Office, either by making sure the existing location is upgraded to proper standards or by obtaining a new facility within the village of Bangor. Be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be mailed to Postmaster General Patrick Donahue, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator Herb Cole, and Representative Ron Kind. Fiscal note, no financial impact to the La Crosse County budget. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Gamroth. Discussion. Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, and I think everybody's familiar with the situation in Bangor, and I know I've been getting a lot of communications from the folks out there. They would like this office opened up again in some capacity. And this is not part of that closings of these rural post offices. This is basically closed because there's all kinds of threats to public health and to the health of the employees because the facility is in poor shape. The facility is not owned by the post office. It's owned by a private person who owns, I guess, lots of post offices, and so far has really not been working with the Postal Service, though they're waiting for some communication from the landlord whether or not he's going to make the repairs. So I just don't want to make the post office the bad guy in this situation. The post office trying to get it worked out. I don't know exactly how it's going to turn out, but I just wanted to make that clarification. I also want to abstain on this one also.
Supervisor Mettinger's vote will be an abstention. Other discussion on the resolution? Supervisor Gamera.
I would just like to say this is so important to our village. It's such a critical and crucial hub of activity. It's so important. We have so many elderly citizens that walk to get their mail, and I just really hope this helps us because it is very crucial for our community.
Other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Abstentions other than Supervisor Mettinger? That resolution is approved with one abstention. Back to Supervisor Burke.
Thank you. Item number 3-14, approval of purchase of property from Jennifer Wall at 1506 Black Oak Drive, Rockland, Wisconsin. Whereas Jennifer Wall purchased the vacant property from the County of La Crosse on July 5th, 2011, located at 1506 Black Oak Drive, Rockland, Wisconsin, 54653, for the sum of $17,000. And whereas Jennifer Wall no longer wishes to own the property, and it is in the best interest of La Crosse County to purchase said property back from Jennifer Wall for the sum of $17,000, and where it has been represented to La Crosse County that Cooley Cap will purchase said property back from La Crosse County in the near future. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby authorizes the purchase of the property at 1506 Black Oak Drive, Rockland, Wisconsin, 54653, parcel number 15-328-0, for the sum of $17,000. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair shall be authorized to sign any documents necessary to accomplish the purpose of this resolution after approval of Corporation Council. Fiscal note, cost to La Crosse County is $17,000 plus closing costs. Funds shall be paid from the General Contingency Fund, 1063, account 79028. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Spiker. Discussion. Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I voted no in committee. This is the area where we got on tax foreclosure. We have 44 lots up there for sale. They all sell for approximately $17,000. Buy this one back, we got 45 lots for sale. Cooley Cap will buy a lot back, not necessarily this specific lot, but it may be this lot. I think Dave explained a problem with those that did some duplexes get built on lots where only single-family homes should have been built. And possibly, my understanding is, her lot may be close to a duplex, I'm assuming. My remedy for the situation is let her pick a different lot, since they're all approximately $17,000 anyway, which would be farther away from, and I've never quite had this clarified, how duplexes got built on lots that are supposed to be single family. Maybe Dave can get that clarified. But we already own 44 lots. Do we really need to own 45 lots up there? I think the remedy is let her pick a different lot.
I'm going to ask that Brian Fukuda be heard on this to give the background to clarify some of those questions for Supervisor Geary and others.
Just to speak to that particular scenario, we did actually talk with Ms. Wall about that option. It did not appear that would satisfy her. So the idea was, if we're not going to satisfy her with that, then we probably wouldn't want to go through the process of trading a lot for her, and still have her dissatisfied with being in that subdivision.
Supervisor Geary. I'm sorry, Schrader.
So, in actuality, the county kind of precipitated the situation out there by allowing duplexes to be built when there was a covenant out there. Is that correct?
Right. There were covenants on the subdivision. We are currently in the process of amending those covenants to allow for duplexes. We were under the impression that my fault, we didn't look at those covenants, but when we took the subdivision, there was essentially one new structure in that subdivision, and it was a duplex. So we moved forward working with Cooley Cap to build some duplexes as well as some single-family houses. Everything that's been built out there is quality housing. But, you know, in this particular case, we have a buyer who is unsatisfied, and staff recommendation is that we would like to purchase the lot back from her so we don't have negative publicity because we do have a significant number of lots out there. There would be some potential for legal action because of the covenants. It's slim. I don't know, you know, what would come of it. It could be against us. It could be against Cooley Cap. We felt it best to just avoid that situation, make sure everybody is happy out there, and that helps us market the rest of those lots out there.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. So when we originally took ownership of that property, we were under the impression that it was already in place a covenant that it would only be single family.
Correct.
And in whose ownership time was the first duplex built? In ours or the prior village of Rockland?
When that duplex was built, the lots were owned on a land contract by the developer, the Colfer brothers, who developed that subdivision in cooperation with the village. They owned them on a land contract with the Joseph Becker Trust.
Okay.
And now the rest of the undeveloped lots have reverted back to the Joseph Becker Trust, and the developed lots came to us in the tax foreclosure.
Okay, and are the duplexes owner-occupied or totally rental?
They're rental.
Okay.
They're Cooley Cap built three duplexes out there. I'm not sure. The one duplex that was there, I'm not sure if that's – I'm not even sure if that's occupied at this point. But the three that Cooley Cap's built now will all be rental.
And what about the remaining houses that Cooley Cap has built? Are they also a mix of rental and owner? Or?
They are owner-occupied.
Owner.
One of them to date is a land trust, so Cooley Cap has retained ownership of the land and sold the home to remain it affordable, or to keep it affordable housing.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Gamroth.
Most of the lots are very narrow. How are we getting duplexes on there?
Well, that's part of what we looked at is we've placed the duplexes on the corner lots. The corner lots are a little bit bigger. It also has a better, in my opinion, I guess, a better aesthetic appeal because you have one house facing either street. So if you see it from head on either street, it appears to be a single family house with one garage, one front door. So that we've placed the duplexes on the corner lots.
Is that eliminating corner lots for single family dwellings, or are there a lot more opportunities?
There's plenty of other opportunities for single families on corners or otherwise.
Are the duplexes going to be all intermixed, or are they going to be in a certain area? Is it going to be all throughout the development?
As we work with all the owners out there have a vote on the amendment of the covenants. Right now, the covenants read no duplexes. What we're working to come to an agreement on is where duplexes should be allowed. Our contention would be allow duplexes throughout the subdivision, intermix them. There's case studies where you can look at if all the rental housing is put in one area, it tends to deteriorate quicker. In my opinion, again, a better development strategy would be to, you know, intersperse it throughout. That's still what we'll be talking about. It's a two-thirds vote to amend the covenants. We own just shy of two-thirds. The Becker Trust owns the most of the rest of it. So between the county and the Becker Trust, we're working on amending those covenants. And it'll probably be somewhere in between there. We'll probably identify some lots that will be single family, some that will be duplex, but that's still being worked out.
I had a call. Someone was wondering, is there any real estate agent or anybody involved in this to market those lots? Because so many people aren't even aware they're there.
Well, there is the Becker Trust actually has a real estate agent that is marketing their lots. All of their lots are the unimproved lots that don't have street, sewer, water, those types of things. The ones with street, sewer, and water are owned by us, but we have gotten some traffic from the signs and advertising that.
But there isn't any other.
But we have not contracted with any realtor. We do have a page. We actually just completed, if you check out our new economic development website, a quick plug for that. We do have a section for county-owned properties. There's a dedicated page for Meadow Park Estates. It's got a map. It's got lots of information about the lots, and we're starting to use that a little bit more in marketing. But
right. What's the average size of those lots?
I apologize. I don't know offhand, and I don't actually. Here it is. It's about these range from 0.22 to 0.26 acres, so about a quarter acre.
Okay. Thank you.
On the resolution, Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm on the Cooley Board, Cooley Cap Board of Directors, and I know we have our own realty division. I'm wondering why La Crosse County has to buy this property and then Cooley Cap will buy it from La Crosse County. Aren't we going through closing costs and all that twice? Why doesn't Cooley Cap directly buy it from Jennifer, whatever her name is? Is there a reason why we're doing like two transactions?
It has to do with the grant funding that Cooley Cap is using to purchase these lots. They're through the grant conditions, they're not allowed to buy it directly from a third party. And there's also a timing issue that's involved in that. Is, you know, we'd like to just get it taken care of, and Cooley Cap is still waiting on their grant funding. It should be coming through, you know, probably early summer, but that's what we're. So there's a couple of issues there.
I have Supervisor Meyer for the first time, and then a couple of folks who want to be heard a second time. Anybody else for a first time besides Supervisor Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian, the map is very good. It shows just where everything is and everything. It appears that the covenants were violated before we ever got the property in 2009, correct?
Yes.
So when we got it, it was already wrong. Okay, so nothing to do about that. Except, I don't know what we do with Becker's on the whole deal. But secondly, can't we at least get her to pay the closing costs? We're the good guys here. We're taking this back. And I understand what Dave said. We're going to do this in lieu of possibly getting into a lawsuit. But can we get the closing costs?
That's what we'll try to do. I didn't put for sure we would, because I don't, for $300, I, you know, is it really worth nixing the thing? But that's what we'll do.
But it's just, we're the good guys.
For a second time, Supervisor Geary.
Well, to elaborate on that, some of those duplexes got built after we bought the property and should have been built, right?
Yes.
Okay. But are we putting any restrictions? Is Cooley Cap going to try to sell these duplexes? Or are they just going to own them and rent them?
They will own them and rent them.
But they're not actively trying to sell any of them?
Not at this point, no. The grant dollars that they've tapped into, I believe, have, and Charlie may know more about this than I do, but I believe under the grant agreements that they have with the state, they have to retain ownership of them for, I believe it's 15 years, and then after 15 years they could potentially sell them.
Okay. We could potentially sell it to a private party that wants to put a duplex up on one of these lots? Right.
Yeah, well, once we do the covenant amendment, then we could...
I'm talking about an empty lot right now. If a private party wants to put a duplex on one of the corner ones that's up for sale, they could do that.
Once we do the covenant amendment, they could.
Okay. I'm saying, are we going to make those owner-occupied? Well, I think it should be in the discussion that they'll be better maintained if they're owner-occupied versus rental.
Yeah, I...
Dave has an answer also.
Right now, if we didn't have a building up, the restrictions say no duplexes, so we wouldn't be able to build a duplex right now on a vacant lot. Not until they change.
I just thought you told me all the corner ones we're going to put duplexes on.
They're already built. Maybe some are already built.
But I thought we had more corners that don't have anything on them.
Right. And my answer is right now, if we, you know, we would sell and say there are restrictions that say no duplexes. So until we change, if we change those to allow it, then we could. But right now, the answer would be no.
So are we going to change it, or are we leaving them all single family now?
No, we're working to change those with Becker, who owns the rest of the property we need to be.
Okay, when we make the change, are we going to require them to be owner-occupied?
We haven't discussed that, and the main reason that we haven't discussed that is that the county's situation in this is we own a significant amount of lots, and we want to sell them. I think, you know, what we've been working with Becker on is trying to minimize the restrictions on the lots, so we're able to sell the lots. I think, you know, we're still going to get quality development out there. I think we have we've established a pretty good design standard with the houses that have been built by Cooley Cap and by another private individual that bought and built a house out there. We own a lot of lots. We want to sell them, get our money back.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. I believe you told me when we were talking about this before, or when you presented to our committee, that the single-family homes there were going to have garages?
I believe all of them have garages.
Okay. Are the duplexes going to be required to have garages?
The duplexes that have been built have garages. They're is not a requirement that you have a garage in the covenants?
Well, at least one car garage.
I'm going to caution supervisors to ask questions germane to the resolution, which is a policy decision about whether or not we are willing to buy back this lot. Supervisor Schrader, you still have the floor.
Well, it would just be my recommendation that you require that if that covenants do get changed.
Sure.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. I realize you have rightfully suggested we stick to the issue at hand. However, I do think that the question of what kind of maintenance standards and parking standards are likely to be enforceable in that development, because if for the people who already have lots, I'm not sure if anybody else besides Cooley Cap owns developed parcels at this stage, but if the covenants are being changed, they need to take into consideration the question of maintenance standards, parking standards, the type of questions that have been asked here, because this lady who, when you look at the layout here, I mean, she obviously chose a lot that she thought was going to overlook the railroad, which some people wouldn't choose to do. But anyway, she has three duplexes. And if Cooley Cap is going to continue to retain ownership for rental purposes, then I really have great sympathy for this lady, and I think we should support taking the lot back. But I would say with reservation that we need to look at what type of planned unit development do we want to have out there in the end.
Supervisor Bills Kemper.
Yes, thank you. We're talking about the purchase of property from Jennifer Wall. Now, for the last 10 minutes, the county board has got itself into micromanaging and building a sub-development. I would like to call the question and steer this back to where it belongs.
Thank Supervisor you. Bills Kemper has moved to close debate, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are Supervisors Friedland, Weirs, and Pedretti, and Geary. That's sufficient for 2/3 of members present. Debate is closed on the computer. A reminder that we need 2/3 of the full board on this, which would be we need at least 24 votes. If you are in favor of the resolution, which is to purchase back the property, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. The resolution is approved on a vote of 25-2. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Resolution 3-15, the Honorable Members of the Lacrosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the claims of Cheryl Nance and Olin Nance. Whereas Cheryl Nance and her husband, Olin Nance, have filed a claim alleging that on September 22, 2010, Cheryl Nance was traveling southbound on Rose Street, Highway 53, in the left lane when a sheriff's deputy attempted to merge to the left lane medium when Ms. Nance was turning in the left lane medium that resulted in an accident, and seeks damages in the total amount of $250,000. And whereas Wisconsin Municipal Mutual Insurance Company has reviewed the information, investigated the facts, and determined that La Crosse County has no liability for this claim and recommends formal disallowance of the claim by the county board. And whereas the above stated claims do not appear to be meritorious and should be disallowed, now therefore be it resolved that the claims of Cheryl Nance and Olin Nance against La Crosse County, its officers, officials, employees, and agents are hereby disallowed, and further be it required that notice of disallowance of this claim shall be served on the claimants by registered or certified mail, and the receipts therefore signed by the claimants or the returned registered letters shall be proof of service. Be it further resolved that the claimants are notified that no action on the claim against La Crosse County nor against any of its officers, officials, agents, or employees may be brought after 6 months from the date of service of this notice of disallowance. Fiscal note, the cost of La Crosse County for sending certified mail restricted delivery to the claimants is $20.18. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Karen Johnson. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved. Is that it for you?
Yes.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke. Over to you, Supervisor Meyer, for Planning, Resources, and Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor Pedretti will take items 316 and 317. She's our resident reader, you know.
Item 3-16, to the Honorable Members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, approval to establish a Halfway Creek Agriculture Enterprise Area. Whereas La Crosse County has received a request from agricultural landowners in the towns of Holland and Onalaska to support their effort to establish the Halfway Creek Agriculture Enterprise Area in La Crosse County, and whereas the establishment of an AEA will promote agribusiness and improve the climate for continued and expanded agriculture activities, and will promote collaboration and cooperation between petitioning landowners within the AEA, and whereas this program will assist in preserving valuable agriculturally productive land and valuable natural resources and open space land, and is consistent with the La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan, and whereas the Halfway Creek AEA will provide additional income tax incentives for the participating agricultural landowners in La Crosse County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the establishment of the Halfway Creek Agriculture Enterprise Area. Fiscal note, no cost to La Crosse County. I move its approval.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion. Supervisor Hampson.
I just have a question. It's got the Farmland Preservation Committee on here, and yet there's no signature. Did it not go to that committee?
Supervisor Pedretti.
They had a meeting this afternoon. I think Charlie can give us the voting results.
We met at 4 o'clock, and they approved it unanimously.
Okay, other discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
What kind of, if you know anybody, what kind of tax incentives are they going to get there?
Sure. If a landowner within the AEA is already getting farmland preservation tax credits, which are estimated at $7.50 an acre per year, they would be able to go up to $10 per acre per year. So about $2.50 per acre per year on their income tax.
Other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Resolution is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Pedretti.
Item 3-17, the Honorable Members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, commemorating the 100th anniversary of Cooperative Extension, a division of the University of Wisconsin Extension. Whereas 2012 marks the 100th anniversary of this unique educational partnership between the counties of the state and Cooperative Extension, and whereas this partnership, as pioneered in Wisconsin, embodies the true meaning of Wisconsin idea, that the resources and knowledge of the university shall be extended to the people of the state wherever they live and work. And whereas the 100th anniversary commemorates the contributions of all Cooperative Extension educators to the growth and development of the entire state. And whereas the first extension position in La Crosse County, an emergency food agent, began in 1917. The first family living agent began in 1918. The first ag agent began in 1919. The first 4-H youth agent began in 1950. And the first community resource development agent began in 1961. And whereas Cooperative Extension's purpose is to teach, learn, lead, and serve, connecting the people with the University of Wisconsin, and engaging with them in transforming lives and community. And whereas the vitality of today's Cooperative Extension programs can be credited to the men and women of vision who accepted the challenge in 1912 to create the Wisconsin County Extension System. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby commends the UW Extension, its Division of Cooperative Extension, and its local county extension educators for their cooperation and support, which allows the people of La Crosse County to apply the research and knowledge of the University of Wisconsin in their lives, homes, farms, schools, and businesses. Fiscal note, zero. The UW Extension Department is jointly funded by La Crosse County, the State of Wisconsin, and the U.S. Department of Ag. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion? Supervisor Pedretti.
Just a quick point of order. The Wisconsin Counties Association magazine for this last month has a very good article. I think it's about 6 or 7 pages. Some wonderful history on the UW, on the 100th anniversary.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is approved. Now back to you, Supervisor Meyer.
Item 3-18, zoning petition number 1884 to amend La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Robert and Deborah Allen for a petition to rezone from Transitional Agriculture District to Agriculture District A for one continued and one future residential use in the town of Hamilton. This petition passed unanimously by a vote of 5-0. With 2 conditions, I move for your approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion on this? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item 3-16, conditional use permit number 1852, filed by Chris O'Hearn of the Family Radio Incorporated, acting on behalf of Thomas Kenhammer to operate and broadcast radio tower with one antenna as a backup tower only on an existing 100-foot self-supporting telecommunication tower originally authorized under conditional use permit number 710 to Airborne Dateline, which was terminated in June 16, 2011, along with a 8-foot by 12-foot wood frame building to house equipment, all enclosed in a 30 by 20-foot fence on 1.01 2 acres of land zoned Agriculture District A in the town of Madary. This petition also passed unanimously 5-0 with 10 conditions. I move for approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item 3-20, conditional use permit number 1853, filed by Michael and Carla Stewart to operate a gunsmithing business known as Stewart Custom LLC to include firearm repair, sales, transfer, and approximately 17-foot by 15-foot shop in the area that is part of a residential residence located at N6796 County Road C on 2.34 acres in land zone Agriculture District A in the town of Hamilton. Also passed unanimously 5-0 with 8 conditions. I move for approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved.
That's all I have.
Thank you,
Mr. Meyer. Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Any
suggestions for future agenda items? Supervisor Hampson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we were going through Chapter 1, talking about committees and...
Is your microphone on?
Yes.
Thank you.
I looked through some of the county website, and we have a lot of committees that don't seem to do anything. And I'm thinking we ought to look through some of those other committees. For instance, Commission on Equal Opportunities in Housing. I happen to chair that. It hasn't met in years.
Public Is that a statement on your...
It's just, I'm just saying.
Leadership?
I'm not criticizing anyone else. I'm including myself in this stupidity. Public Safety Commission met once. There was no quorum. Some of these haven't met in 2 years. One of them dissolved 2 years ago, and it's still on there. And the Tech Advisory Committee can't be accessed due to technical difficulties. This is true. You go there. You try it. So I'm just requesting that we have a look at some of those subcommittees and advisory committees and clean that up, too. Thank you.
Duly noted. Thank you. Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For future agenda, when the chairs or who's ever reading resolutions, I assume everybody can read, after the reference in the first whereas, I don't see any reason why we have to sit here and be subjected to a waste of time and read along. Why don't we just drop to the therefore, be it resolved? It's just a waste of time, in my opinion. I would like to see that in the future.
Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a great idea. We already have an ordinance on it, but we don't pay attention to it. We already have an ordinance that's just what we have to read, and it's very minimal. I agree with you 100%.
Perhaps that can be part of the orientation for new county board supervisors, and that's a perfect segue for me to remind folks that if you have suggestions for the orientation for new supervisors, that you let me know, please. We're needing to make sure we have those plans finalized. Other suggestions for future agenda items? If not, Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point to ponder. Don't argue with an idiot. He will drag you down to his level and beat you with experience. I ask God for a bike. But God doesn't work that way. So I had to think of something else. So I stole the bike and prayed for his forgiveness. Without another adjourn.
Moved by Supervisor Sobranek to adjourn, seconded by Supervisor Manti. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned with the thanks.